Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM.
Hello, and welcome to Alaska Edition on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Ellen Lockyer. Just yesterday, Anchorage Fashionistas lined up to be the first inside the new H&M men's and women's apparel store in Anchorage. We'll be viewing some footage of that exciting event in a moment. Today, we're taking a look at how and why national brands, and in H&M's case, international brands, are locating in Anchorage. First, let's introduce our guests. Bruce Bustamante is the president of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. Hi, Bruce.
Thank you.
And Muheen Gotabi is an economist with ICER, that's the Institute of Social and Economic Research at UAA. Hi, Muheen.
Hi, Ellen.
And Brandon Walker is a broker with Jack White Commercial Real Estate, specializing in commercial leasing. Hi, Brandon.
Thanks for having me.
So that is our panel of experts. So what I'd like to know is, what makes a national company, a national well-known brand, retail brand, decide to move to Anchorage or anywhere in Alaska? What are the signs? Is it demographics? Is it population driven? Is it something else? Are they targeting a specific segment of the population? So I was going to first take a look, as promised, at this frenzy that attended the H&M opening at the Diamond Mall in Anchorage only yesterday. So can we roll that video? Because Monica Gokey with KAKM is going to bring it.
The H&M opening in Anchorage yesterday was characterized by a bonanza of techno music and fanfare. The Swedish company is the latest global retailer to dip a toe in the far north.
This is our first H&M store in Alaska, so we're really excited to be in Anchorage. We have our grand opening today. We open about 60 to 70 stores a year, but this is, you know, an important market for us. We really make this an event and a celebration. We have a DJ, and now our whole staff's gonna be outside, you know, dancing and cheering, and it's just a really fun environment.
The 35,000 square foot store opened at the Diamond Center, a retail paradise in Midtown. Diamond Center owner Hugh Ashlock says it was a lengthy courtship process with H&M.
It's been a three-year process, probably around $8 or $10 million project.
It's been a few years in the making, you know, trying to find the right location, and then we've hired 60 people for this store.
Hundreds lined up outside the store and inside the mall to get a glimpse of the new retailer. Dee Dee Harris got there 2 hours before the store opened.
I've never been to an H&M, actually. It's not really, I always usually go to Forever 21, so, you know, it's like a new experience for me. Honestly, I really wish they had a Macy's and a Victoria's Secret. And, you know, I can't think of everything right now, but really a Macy's. That's like my favorite store.
In addition to men's and women's fashion, the new H&M is also bringing its children's, plus size, and maternity collections to town. The store is the latest in a slew of global brands to set up shop in the 49th state. Bath & Body Works opened over the summer in the Fifth Avenue Mall, and Nordstrom Rack is scheduled to open later this year. Even with falling oil prices and fiscal belt tightening elsewhere in the economy, some Alaskan shoppers seem eager to lay down their money for national brands. In Anchorage, I'm Monica Gokey with Casey Ellingson.
And that is really wonderful. Fashionistas rejoice. So let's start with Bruce Bustamante. Can you outline for us some of the well-known brands that have located in Anchorage, at least the last couple of years?
Yeah, I'd say in the last 2 years, we've welcomed Target to our shopping environment, Cabela's, which I frequent, admittedly, and Bass Pro Shop are probably some of the larger ones that we've seen come into Anchorage. As you mentioned, H&M is the newest addition. Lululemon's, another kind of specialized retail store, has entered the marketplace as well.
Lululemon, my 13-year-old niece was here recently and she turned me on to Lululemon, which I've never heard of, but apparently is now in the Fifth Avenue Mall. Mm-hmm. So I remember back in the 70s during the oil boom, a lot of restaurants, bars, well-known chains located here in Anchorage, and many of them are still here. But there was not the retail surge of new stores that is happening now. Can you tell me maybe, how do the national chains work? Do they contact the Chamber of Commerce, or do they?
Well, they don't necessarily contact the Chamber of Commerce. They have a number of factors that they need to look into: available real estate, cost of real estate, but also the more or less the demographics of their customers and their shoppers. And when you look at the buying power of Alaskans, it's still relatively strong as compared to others, other markets in the lower 48. The job market is strong, meaning there's a lot of people that are employed. But when we see retailers such as H&M, Lululemon come into the marketplace, I think it's also a fair representation of our demographics as well. I mean, we've got a young professional population that's continuing to grow, that they themselves have buying power, and probably a lot of them have shopped in these stores in the lower 48. My first visit to H&M was in Boston just in September. I was there for a friend's wedding, and it was certainly geared toward a younger population in Boston. Of course, that's there, so many colleges and students and young people there. It's a great location for them, so it was good to see them come into the Anchorage marketplace.
Right, so it is, part of it is the demographics, and like you mentioned, the buying power. Alaskans still have a little more money in their pockets, I think, than do others. And the fact that it is attractive to young people. You know, it's funny, you anticipated my last my next question was, how do these stores add to a community's character? Mm-hmm. And as you were saying, they are geared to the younger generation. Also, the job question, because there was 60 jobs at H&M, that woman mm-hmm. in the video said, mm-hmm. and they are young people's jobs, pretty much, retail clerks, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to know, though, do the national brands coming in, pretty big ones like Cabela's, Lululemon,
Best
do they possible. Hurt or help local smaller businesses?
I don't know if I could provide an answer to that question that would represent all of the small businesses and all of the scenarios that take place. I mean, you'd have to look at, well, what is the impact that Lowe's and Home Depot have on Ace Hardware, which is more your corner neighborhood hardware store? What impact will Bass Pro Shop and Cabela's have on smaller local sporting goods retailers? And they bring a lot of product into the marketplace. The consumer is the one that definitely wins in the end. But as I've seen with examples of smaller retailers competing against the larger ones, they have to really focus on quality and service and hang on to their existing customer base. And I haven't seen too many exit the market since we've seen the bigger retailers come in those particular sectors.
Right. One more for you right now. How about, like, whereas Walmart came in about 20 years ago and they mm-hmm. seem to have taken root here all over the South Central area and probably Southeast. How about, like, Kmart pulled out, though, after mm-hmm. only a couple of years? Do you have any insights as to why that has occurred?
I think more of an anecdotal observation on them, in that Kmart, they were coming into some financial hard times on a national basis. And so it wasn't just the Anchorage stores that were closed, or the Alaska stores, the number that were downsized here in the state. It was really more of a national issue for them to reduce their size. But then, as we lost Kmart, it wasn't much longer that Walmart decided to expand. Costco, I'm not sure when Costco came into the marketplace, but they've just got a tremendous impact here. But I'll also bring another element into play here when we look at the appeal of the Anchorage marketplace for retail, and that is, we're also a true commerce hub for the state of Alaska. A lot of people come into Anchorage either on business or specifically to go shopping for school clothes, shopping for provisions, coming in for doctor's appointments, dentist appointments, and while they're in Anchorage, they're going to do some shopping. So it's not just the 300,000 plus population base that's appealing to the retailers, but it's also the track of folks coming in from rural Alaska to shop in Anchorage.
Right, and the Diamond Mall has a whole hotel based on that premise. So maybe if someone was considering moving to Anchorage for a job, they would. Having a Nordstrom Rack or a mm-hmm. Lululemon would actually influence that decision.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And if you look in the business market again, the people that are transient mm-hmm. within that, the people that are growing professionally, they're moving up within a corporation, they sometimes move, to other markets and such. And we have to look at, well, what do we have to appeal to that age group of 39 to 25? And so I think this retail environment is a little bit more conducive for that, in the end, it really, I think it will help us.
Yeah, it's attractive. So let's turn to Brandon Walker, and he is going to tell us about how does it work? Do they come to you and say, we need so many commercial square feet, and where do you guide us, or do you go to them, or how does it work for you?
All of the above. In the case of H&M, actually I should back up, there's probably one of the single most influential things in bringing a national organization to Anchorage would be something called the International Council of Shopping Centers. Mm-hmm. And they meet several times a year, but they have two annual meetings that are their biggest meetings, one in the winter that's usually at a ski resort, and one in the spring or summer that is in Vegas. And that is probably the single largest gathering of developers and retailers and brokers and everybody that's involved in this process. And so the retailers will have booths and the developers will have booths, and they're all, the developers are pitching their properties to the retailers, and the retailers are shopping, so to speak, for locations to put their stores. And so I would say that most of these national organizations that you see moving into Anchorage are originating from the ICSE meetings.
That's fascinating. I had no idea. So, and is there like a state organization that helps you pitch, or is it just generally up to the private sector real estate people?
No, they're, in the case of H&M, they have a very active owner, and he's a very charismatic individual, and he's very good at it, in fact. So he has great relationships with national retailers and developers, and he probably knows this business better than anyone. In fact, he should be here today to talk about this. But he engages with these groups and pitches them Anchorage and his property, and a lot of times he's able to connect, and I think H&M is a fantastic example of that. If you back up a decade, you know, Gap, Old Navy, those types of groups, they came here, they went to Diamond Center first because of his influence. Oftentimes those groups also have national brokers that represent them. And so if they identify a market like ours that they want to come to, those national brokerage groups, they'll reach out to someone like myself who has some boots on the ground, so to speak. And so I can, you know, help them get familiar with the market and show them where the opportunities are, because they're not always public. You know, sometimes there are opportunities that are under the surface. So.
Well, how does Alaska, well, specifically Anchorage, compare with other cities in the United States as far as availability of retail space? You know, we only have, four malls in Anchorage? Four main malls.
Right. So right now our national vacancy rate for retail is, for just overall all product types, is about 11%. But our local retail vacancy rate for all product types is about 4%. So and 4%, I would say, is just on the borderline of not necessarily being undersupplied, but it's a very tight vacancy rate. And it's probably the lowest that we've seen in a long time, despite some of the new properties. But that was, I think that absorption, that decrease, say, in the last couple years, was largely the result of Bass Pro Shops gobbling up 100,000 feet of product. And so there was, you know, we had a pretty big influx here in the last couple of years that has contributed to that low vacancy rate. Well,
now, I've heard that Cabela's built its own store. Is that common? Or some of them do. I mean, Walmart did.
Probably, it happens. It's probably less frequent than leasing a property. Mm-hmm. And it's just easier to partner with a developer or, a property owner who already has a property or a project that's planned for a really great intersection or has good anchors. And that's why, for example, we saw Takotnu, you know, grow so quickly over the last several years, is they were so well anchored that they were able to draw tenants from other properties and create kind of a critical mass with those anchors.
So it really depends on who is there first, or the anchor tenant, as you say, that would
right.
influence a decision to locate here.
Right.
And how about you put the two together? You put the real estate together with the person who wants to come here, and then what happens? Do the malls take it from there? Who controls the leasing arrangement? Would it be specifically the mall, or do you folks get involved in it? Or?
Well, most of the properties have representation, and some of it is someone local like myself, and usually it's someone inside their organization that's licensed to do that. And then the retailer or the national brand would negotiate through both their national broker and through an individual like myself. And so that team would work together to negotiate a deal with the property owner and their team.
Right, and as we saw in the video, the Diamond Mall worked to lure H&M here. It took about
exactly
3 years, they said. So sometimes
exactly
it's quite tight negotiations. And as we reiterated in the video, 60 jobs came out of that H&M store. So let's turn to Musine. I'm not going to say your name right, Musine here. Tell me about retail jobs. First of all, how do they add to the economy? They don't pay as great, but there's a lot of them.
That is correct. I mean, there are probably more Alaskans working in the retail sector than just about any other sector, right? And so we have somewhere close to 40,000 retail trade jobs in the state, about half of which are in Anchorage. When you look at some very broad averages, they probably pay somewhere around $2,000 a month. That's half of what the average job pays in the state. And so less well paid, some of which are part-time, some of which are seasonal, but they're essential in providing opportunities to younger people. They're also a lot of the time stopgap jobs that a lot of people take on while looking for something more permanent. And more importantly, the retail sector is part of the overall support sector, if you will, right? And so when an economist is asked about how the economy operates, you usually go, oh, the basic sector drives the economy, i.e. sectors that bring in money from outside of whatever locality you're analyzing. So in our case, in Alaska's case, that would be oil and gas, that would be fishing, that would be the federal government. But the money that's generated from those sectors ends up circulating in the economy and the support sector, the retail in this case being a really, really important lever that allows the money generated by the basic sector to circulate in the economy. And the bigger that support sector is, the more that money ends up circulating in the economy and therefore multiplies.
So, right, the dollars spent in the store go to the retail clerks, which adds to their pocket, which
Absolutely.
Allows them to
yeah,
go to some
yeah.
other store.
The multiplier, conservatively speaking, for every dollar of sales or so, there is another 70 cents or so that's generated in the rest of the economy through these jobs that are created, through the spending of the clerks, through the spending of the people that are generating the money.
So although many of the, you're saying that the retail jobs, although they don't pay like an oil job, well, it still adds to the whole. But often you hear that retail service jobs in general, they don't pay enough for people to meet like the high costs of living in Anchorage. How does that figure into the equation?
I mean, certainly low wage jobs make it difficult for somebody to pay for the necessities. We do have higher wages than a lot of other places, meaning that most of our wages adjust for the cost of living. Now, of course, would somebody working in the mining industry have an easier time paying rent than somebody in the retail sector? Absolutely. But you're going to have an economy that's well balanced. You're going to have a bit of both. And in this case, the retail sector does play that role of stabilizing the economy to a certain extent and providing jobs that are essential.
Plus, it provides, like you said, essential jobs. I was just reading today, Alaska's unemployment rate is well above the national average. Is it unemployment? Unemployment rate is above the national average at 6.8%.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a good thing.
The fact that it's 6.8, I mean, I don't like the unemployment rate as an indicator. It's terribly flawed, but Alaska is countercyclical to the rest of the U.S., right? And so when oil prices are high, we do very well, while the rest of the U.S. does poorly. Non-energy producing states do poorly. Right now, it's the other way around, right? And so we rely heavily on oil prices and oil revenues, and the fact that they've lagged hurts the economy to a certain extent. But, the existence, one of the things that's really interesting about these types of change entering the market is that they're arguably better able to withstand short-term economic downturns, right? And so the argument is often made in the oil and gas sector that one of the blessings of having the big three operate in the state is that they have diversified portfolios, and the fact that some of their Alaska properties may not be doing very well is not enough for them to move away. And so as more and more of these large retailers enter the market, it may be a way for us to withstand some of these short-term shocks a little bit better, because they're probably not gonna fold as quickly as somebody that's simply reliant on the revenues from one specific store.
Right, so these maybe lesser paying service jobs do carry us over in times of financial stress. Also, they do provide entry-level employment for a lot of young people who need to learn the ropes of working a day job. Plus, they are, I think, more flexible. Somebody could work part-time at a store as a second job if they needed extra money. How does that translate into the state picture? I asked you earlier, does the state have a gross product, a gross mm-hmm. state product?
Yeah.
Can you comment on that?
Yeah, every state has it. So the national equivalent is gross domestic product, which most people are probably familiar with. At the state level, we do have one. The figures from which are slightly misleading because we're not a heavily populated state, right? 700,000 or so. So when you divide the overall state product or gross state product by the number of people, we have something like $71,000 per person, gross state product per individual. It's about $71,000. The US equivalent is about $46,000, right? And so that stems from the fact that our most valuable resource is one that happens to be very expensive, right? And so oil and gas. And so you have, so the gross state product, the way it operates is the value of goods and services that are essentially produced in an economy. In this case, we have a resource that happens to be highly valued. And so the overall gross state product for the state is very, very high, right? So we're second to DC, which is normally not counted. So we arguably per individual or per capita have the highest gross state product in the nation. Now, does that translate into spending power? Maybe, maybe not, because we're probably not seeing, you know, the benefits from said gross state product, but we do have a really high median income per capita as well.
Right, and taxes. I know we have no income tax, but these giant corporations that own many of these retail stores, they pay corporate taxes, mm-hmm. I have to take it. Not on the scale of the oil folks, but they would add to the state coffers in that way.
Absolutely. I mean, a significant portion of our general fund comes obviously from oil revenues. Corporate taxes are an important part of funding important aspects of the budget, and they do contribute in one way or another. The question that's interesting is how much of the revenues leak out of the state once these large players come in, and that's, you know, an open question of sorts.
Well, that was my next question. How much of this money stays in the state? Considerably, a lot.
Yeah, that's a really important question, right? And so when you're trying to determine the quote-unquote economic impact of an entity or of a business, you want to determine how connected is said business to other industries, to other businesses, because if they're buying a lot of the inputs that they use from other locations within the state or within Anchorage, then that means a lot of that money is staying within, right? And so, and they're reinvesting their revenues. If, on the other hand, a lot of what they're selling is being shipped already made from elsewhere and being sold, and the revenues are again shipped out of state, then the footprint, if you will, of said institute is negligible. It's hard to believe that there would be a negligible effect from somebody like an H&M or a Cabela's, because a lot of that money probably does stay in state, and there are other institutions with which they collaborate. And so there are these linkages that are absolutely essential for the health of the economy.
Wow, that's fascinating. Thanks, Musine. Mm-hmm. I'm going to turn to Bruce a moment. We mm-hmm. talk about the big box stores, the big retail people, the giants, you know, but changing demographics, changing population. We've seen a lot of changes in Alaska the last three or four decades. And what about little mom and pop stores? How do they figure in? Because I see halal markets, I see Mexican groceries. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You see these little special niche stores. And mm-hmm. does the chamber keep an eye on those folks?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we welcome businesses, all legal businesses of all sizes, to be members of the chamber and certainly take advantage of the programs we have to do business among themselves. But you know, we are seeing that and smaller restaurants, smaller retailers coming in, you know, more specialized shops popping up in Anchorage. And overall, you know, the economy is good, and it does foster that, and it does foster good entrepreneurism too within our city.
I think so. I think it's a very exciting time to live in Anchorage. I lived here back in the 70s, and it's a totally mm-hmm. different city, believe me. And Brandon, any final comments you would like to make? Because we are starting to run out of time.
Not really.
Not really.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, well, you're off the hook, and looks like we are running out of time. I'd like to say thank you to my guests, Bruce Bustamante, Brandon Walker, and Musine Ghatavi. And don't forget, we are Alaska Edition, and we will be back next week with another fascinating show. Thanks for listening. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.